Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Suzlon Energy Limited Q1 FY26 earnings conference call. During this call, the company management may make certain statements that reflect their outlook for the future, which could be constructed as forward-looking statements. These statements are based on management's current expectations and are associated with uncertainties and risks. As detailed in the annual report, actual results may differ, so these statements could be reviewed in conjunction with the risk the company faces. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during this conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on a touch-tone phone. Please note that this call is being recorded. We will begin with opening remarks followed by a Q&A session. To be fair to others, we kindly request each participant to ask no more than two or three questions. From the management, we have with us Mr. J.P. Chalasani, Group CEO, and Mr. Himanshu Mody, Group CFO. Thank you, and over to Mr. J.P. Chalasani, sir.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us for Suzlon Q1 FY26 earnings conference call, especially considering that these are crowded days for results. This year is a momentous one for us as we celebrate 30 years of Suzlon. Over the past three decades, we have consistently demonstrated resilience, innovation, and future-focused mindset that continues to shape our journey. Talking about the industry, the recent amendment to the wind ALMM procedure by MNRE marks a significant policy shift, one that is expected to realign industry dynamics by providing a level playing field to all participants and strengthen supply chain resilience. Suzlon is fully compliant and strategically aligned with the policy framework. On the commissioning front, the industry is over 2 GW is already commissioned in the first 4 months of FY26, signaling a positive shift in the execution pace. We expect the industry to do close to 6 GW of wind installations in FY26. Coming to business highlights, we are delighted to report yet another record-breaking quarter, with Suzlon setting a new benchmark in execution by delivering an unprecedented 444 MW in Q1 FY26, which is the highest-ever first quarter in the last 30 years. Our order book surpassed 5.7 GW, marking 10 consecutive quarters of growth and reaffirming our leadership across PSU and C&I segments and utility segments. Order book for the 144 model, S144 model, now exceeds 5 GW, a testament to superior technology and strong customer confidence. We take pride in stating that S144 has the lowest carbon footprint across all the OEMs globally and complies with the latest MNRE regulations. On the manufacturing front, our capacity of 4.5 GW is fully operational and ramped up to meet the order book. At Suzlon, we commissioned 117 MW in Q1, with an additional 547 MW of erected WTG currently in the pre-commissioning stage, bringing the total to over 664 MW. With less than 25% of our order book comprising non-EPC projects, where land acquisition lies outside our scope, client-side delays have impacted commissioning timelines. To address this, we have prioritized the projects with partial land availability upfront. Looking ahead, projects which come with substantial land readiness are progressing well and offer greater commissioning visibility for FY26. Additionally, Suzlon is actively pursuing a long-term strategy to mitigate land-related delays by developing an active project pipeline. Our OMS business continues to do well with more than 15 GW of capacity in India, with machine availability ensured above 95%. Renom continues its strides for customer fleet acquisition, with AUM crossing 3 GW. Our forging and foundry business started showing upticks in the last three quarters, and we expect to continue this trend in FY26. Our top priority remains the timely execution of our robust order book while maintaining the highest standards of quality and ESG. We remain committed to achieving our FY26 guidance of 60% year-on-year growth across all key performance parameters. I would now like to invite Himanshu to take you through our financial performance.
Thank you, JP sir, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. As always, for this discussion, I shall be referring to slide numbers 19 to 26 of our investor presentation, which has now been uploaded on our website. Taking you through the Q1 FY26 numbers, in Q1 FY26, Suzlon continued its exponential growth trajectory, delivering 444 megawatts in revenue recognition, which is recording 62% growth on a year-on-year basis, with all financial parameters showing a strong uptrend. Suzlon reported consolidated revenue of 3,117 crores in Q1 FY26, with EBITDA reaching 599 crores, a robust 62% year-on-year growth. The EBITDA margin improved by 86 basis points to 19.2%, up from 18.4% in the same quarter last year. We achieved the PBT of 459 crores, posting a year-on-year growth of 52% over Q1 FY25. We are pleased to report on our balance sheet as of June 25 reflects a position of exceptional strength with a consolidated net worth of 6,542 crores, and our net cash position stands at 1,620 crores, further enhancing our financial flexibility and resilience. Adequate banking limits have been tied up of approximately 7,000 crores for execution of current order book towards working capital requirement. I would also like to reiterate that our end-to-end wind energy model, supported by a fully integrated supply chain, proven execution capability, and best-in-class service, delivers a competitive edge that is both distinct and difficult to replicate. With this, I would now like to hand over the call back to JPC Chalasani, sir.
Thank you, Manju. Before we start discussing the results with all of you, I thought it's good for us to upfront the brief you on the issue of on the development today. As you all know, that which we reported publicly, Himanshu has decided to step down, and he would be quitting as a CFO as on 31st of August this year. Himanshu joined us 4 years back. I still remember that point of time I was advising Mr. Tulsi Tanti on key managerial person hiring. We had at least two or three calls at that point of time, you know, for him to take this plunge and come to Suzlon, the stage where we are in. And it was good that I was able to convince him. He came on board, and he had, all of you know that he had a phenomenal performance for the last 4 years. The results are shown. With all that performance as a CFO, obviously the next question is the growth. In a company, in the financial position that you can't be beyond the group CFO. Before, a few months back, we started discussion and said that Himanshu should move to business for his growth purpose. And in fact, at that point of time, in fact, we started search for the successor for CFO about a couple of months back. And we have been discussing various growth opportunities for him within the business, in the company. Obviously, while we went through a number of discussions, pros, cons, and also he had an opportunity in the financial sector. I know that it's having spent hours and hours together as friends, as mentors, as a group CEO versus group CFO. We went through various pros and cons of continuing here in the business role versus financial sector. At the end of it, of all that debate, he finally decided that at this juncture, the age we were in, where he's in, and the ambition what he has, and the definitive interest what he has, so he decided to take up the financial sector job. So that was a hard decision for him, but having known that what he went through in taking the decision, we all said we respect the decision and we will support him fully. As he mentioned in his letter, obviously he is available to us at any point of time we need to draw upon. And I clearly told him that I take that blank check completely to encash. And I would personally, and as a company, would keep dragging him into all critical issues for support moving ahead. This has been, I know personally, it has been a tough call for Himanshu to decide, because his heart remains in Suzlon, but you know, the mind always says that what to do next. So I think that's the reason he took this call. and we fully support, and we wish him the best of luck. Of course, he's available to us till 31st of August, and thereafter, as per the blank check is fully available. So I thought I should let you know, and also wanted to say that because we were moving him to business, we started a search for the group CFO sometime back, and we are in the advanced stage of appointing the successor to Himanshu. So I thought it's better, you know, we owe you this explanation upfront rather than somebody asking us. So Himanshu, you want to add anything?
Yeah, thanks a lot, JP sir. It's, you know, I mean, no words can do justice to my 4 years that I've had here. So it's been a privilege to serve as the group CFO at Suzlon over the last 4 years. So when I look back at this journey, it's been nothing short of mesmerizing, one that will always remain close to my heart and will cherish. From navigating the challenges of a debt-laden organization to now witnessing Suzlon as a cash surplus resilient enterprise, I feel a deep sense of fulfillment. The dream of reviving Suzlon was an ambitious journey that we embarked upon, and today I can proudly say that the ship has not only weathered the storm, but is now firmly anchored. With the organization now on a strong footing, I believe this is the right time to explore new professional horizons for me personally, as explained, outlined by you. And, you know, I echo the thoughts that it was a very, very tough decision and a well thought through one. After which I have decided to look for opportunities outside Suzlon. And whilst I will be there till 31st August this year, but as I've also put in my resignation letter and as echoed by JP sir, I will be available at the end of a phone, you know, should the company, the management or the board or the Tanti family need me at any point in time. You know, with this, I want to express my heartfelt gratitude to Suzlon family, my colleagues, the leadership team, every individual, all of you who are on this call, you know, several of you have interacted on several occasions one-on-one, and I'm sure I will continue to do so in one shape or form. So I really want to thank all of you, investors and analyst community, for the support that you've shown in us as the management during the Suzlon's transformation journey. With that, I'd like to conclude my presentation and we can open the floor to discuss any performance-related, Q1-related questions that the callers may have. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Yeah, go ahead, open it for the Q&A.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question comes from the line of Sumit Kishore from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Good evening. Thanks for the opportunity. My first question is in relation to the Q1 P&L. The Q1 interest cost seems to be up quarter on quarter. Even though the company is net cash, is there any specific reason? And also, if you could comment on the tax rate. We started with about 29% tax rate in Q1. What is a sustainable tax rate we should be working with going forward on an annual basis?
So, hi, Sumit. So far as the interest cost is concerned, you know, there are a certain one-time processing fees which we've paid out to institutions for working capital optimization that, you know, you will see in place over the next few quarters. So as you know, a large part of our working capital is or has been dependent on letter of comforts issued by REC, based on which we take exposure from the bank. So it's a double ongoing commission that we're paying. Now with our improved results and with an improved FY25 performance, there are, you know, quite a few banks where we have tied up direct working capital limits now. As a result, there is one-time processing fees that we've paid during the quarter to these institutions. But as we move along in the journey quarter-on-quarter basis, this will only help us optimize our bank guarantee and LC charges. So whilst you see the interest cost at about 70 crores this quarter, but directionally, we maintain that, you know, close to about 200 crores per annum should be the net interest cost going forward for the year. So far as the tax rate is concerned, you should stabilize at about 25% through the year. As you know, for this year, it will just be a P&L charge, which is a charge off of the DTA that was created in FY25. There is no cash outlay on account of tax. Depending on how this year pans out, we may have cash outlay going forward, but you should be working with about 25%.
Okay. And so what was the one-off impact in interest for the quarter?
Sumit, don't have the numbers handy, but as I said, directionally assume about 200 crores of net interest cost for the year.
Okay. The second question, is in relation to the phase out of WTG deliveries for the fiscal. So you've done about 444 megawatt in Q1. I mean, typically you had a 40-60 H1, H2 mix on a full fiscal basis. Is this year going to be somewhat different, if at all?
We expect it to be the same. And then we also, as I said in my opening comments, we expect that 60% growth compared to last year to be there.
Yes. But the phase out will be similar to earlier years.
Yeah.
Okay. And finally, after ALMM, what are the early indications for the upcoming tenders or upcoming bids or orders in terms of competition, especially from the Chinese players?
See, as I said, Sumit, what the ALMM does, of course, there are three components, R&D and cybersecurity, which we will not talk right now. On the supply sourcing, if you look at it, what it does is create a level playing field. Because everybody has to source from a list of wind turbine components listed in the ALM wind components, which anybody wants to list there, there's an inspection process, quality checks before it gets listed. So I think whatever the disadvantage we had till now with respect to the Chinese or the one, it goes away. So all of us are on the same level playing field. So even with the disadvantage, we had the significant amount of order book. And moving ahead, I feel it's good for us, the element what is coming, and we are fully compliant on all three aspects, whether it is sourcing or it is R&D or it is the cyber security.
Thank you so much. Those are my questions, and wish you much all the best. Thank you.
Thanks, Sumit. And to answer your question, out of the 70 crores, 14 crores is the one-time processing fees for this quarter.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Mohit Kumar from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, sir, and thanks for the opportunity. My first question, order inflow. How is the order inflow opportunity looking like, given some concerns on the slowing down of signing up of power purchase agreements and concerns related to land acquisitions?
Mohit, first of all, I think henceforth I'm not going to ask my people for business plan. I will look at your analyst report. You seem to be dot on and everything. Okay. That's to you. But on the order book wise, if you look at the breakup, Mohit, for us is that the 54% of our order book is C&I, not connected with bidding, and about 21% is PSU. And 25% is coming to the bid.
So please go ahead with your question. Hello. If there is no response from the participant, we'll move to the next participant. The next question comes from the line of Amit from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead. Mr. Amit, please go ahead with your question.
Continued increase in your other expense and employee costs, where we were expecting that you will have some operational leverage once the volumes pick up. So can you throw some light on it? Because on contribution margin level, things are good, but O&M and employee cost increases, and on the other hand, your O&M business margins are declining. So is there some linkage that you can derive over here? on cost controls?
Amit, before I answer your question, firstly, just want to make sure, are we audible?
Yes, sir, I can hear you.
Yes, sir, you are audible.
Yeah, so Mohit, we apologize. I think, you know, something got interrupted and JPC sir was answering Mohit's question earlier, but we'll come back to Mohit's question. Amit, we'll answer your question now since you're in the queue.
Yeah.
So, you know, from a manpower cost perspective, you know, as we've maintained that, you know, I mean, of course, OMS will continue to deliver close to 40% EBITDA margin. You know, that has always been our guidance, and we are very close to that. So, you know, quarter to quarter, it may differ based on certain one-time income or one-time charges. So the range may vary from a tight range of 39% to 41%, depending on quarter to quarter. But going forward, you know, on the overall breakeven analysis for the WTG division, as we maintained, that about 700 to 750 megawatts, so long as we do, we would be breakeven at the EBITDA level. And we will ensure that the manpower costs or other operational costs are kept under control with that. Another feature that we've started adding from Q1 this year is that the annual PLI provisioning, you know, which historically was done to the extent of 80%, because, you know, company was always falling short of its targets or, you know, for obvious reasons we know of. But now we've started provisioning the PLI to the extent of 100%, which means that, you know, we are, of course, confident of meeting our own internal budgets and targets, which are in line with the guidance that we've offered to the street.
Sir, the line for the participant has been disconnected, so we'll move to the next participant. The next question comes from the line of Sucrit D. Patil from Eyesight Fintrade Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Sucrit Patil here. My question is to Mr. JP. As Suzlon grows in the wind energy and maybe looks at new markets or tech, how are you planning to keep the growth steady if demand slows or there are some policy changes? And if some plans, say, don't work out, do you have a backup to protect the margins and keep moving ahead? Yes, sir.
Yeah, obviously, if you see that today, the order book is 5.7 gigawatts as of today as we speak. And then there are many more orders which are under the discussion. So there are sufficient order book for this year, next year. And the other one, as I mentioned some time back, our order book is predominantly for C&I segment and the PSU segment, which is not going to stop, okay? Because the C&I segment needs this switch over to renewable energy for the tariff arbitrage as well as for the green energy coming into their for their products. And PSU would continue to be there. If at all we can speak about is that will there the PPA sign and the bidding route can be slightly slowed down. But I don't see that overall impact to that extent. We are very much on target to reach that the, if not 100, as we always mentioned, that we will definitely touch 85-90 gigawatts by 2030. We will reach there. Even today, as we speak, about 17 gigawatts of wind is under construction, and we already crossed about 53 gigawatts or so. And I really don't see that as an issue. And as we mentioned some time back, that to ensure that anybody backing out, we are always consciously overbooking compared to what we can supply in a quarter or in a year. So before I really go.
Yeah.
Sorry?
Thanks. Just curious, in case the competition picks up, so are you thinking of going into JVs or into partnership with any firm? And if possible, can you discuss with whom would you be partnering up in the future?
We don't need to partner with anybody in India. We are the leading wind manufacturer, and the competition has been there. Competition will be there. Only the competition would keep changing. At one point of time, we're competing with European players, and today we're competing with Chinese players. Competition would always be there, and we always remain in the market. We bring our models because we have an in-house R&D. We bring our models which are more competitive. The And then today, even after the ALMM has come, new ALMM regulations have come in, which I mentioned some time back, also removes our disadvantage, and we are on the same level playing field with everybody. So therefore, that competition of cheaper imports is not there anymore, okay, moving ahead. So therefore, I don't, it's not out of sense of arrogance, but I think logically, if you see, that would be an issue. But having said that, we always need to keep working towards the reduction of cost per kilowatt hour of our turbines, which would happen from the point of view of reducing the cost of procurement, COGS, as well as improving the efficiency of each of the turbines. And as in the next few months, you will see that, you know, newer and newer versions coming in terms of the same platform with improved efficiencies for our turbines.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for your guidance.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Siddhartha, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello. Sir, am I audible?
Yeah, you are. Please go ahead.
Congrats on a great set of numbers, sir. Two questions I wanted to ask. One on the new product development journey that you just talked about. Could you please throw some light on what kind of product development journey we have? I understand the S144 is one of the highest performing products in the market today, but are you looking to launch, you know, products beyond the 3.15 megawatt, say somewhere around 4 megawatt turbines?
Let me not put a number to it, but as you know that, you know, we are the only Indian OEM who has in-house R&D. We keep developing models from time to time. So the what we do is that because we study the, I mentioned this in earlier calls as well, because we study the wind data across the country from time to time. Every year we keep showing the wind sites. We know what type of a wind sites will come in 2 years, 3 years down the line, and what type of a turbine model is required there so that cost per kilowatt hour doesn't go up. So once one model is out, even before that is out, next model is always on the design for us. So I can assure you that the next set of models would come in time. And also let's understand the fact that the megawatt size doesn't make any sense in India, especially. What is important is what comes as cost per kilowatt hour. In fact, the Director General of NEVA was on record in the open meeting with the chairman, with the minister, saying that India is best suited for anywhere between 3 to 4 megawatt because of our low wind speed, and we are not suitable for either thing. And second thing is also logistics is an issue. So therefore, it takes some time before large turbines can be transported to the site. But to answer your question, yes, we will bring out the next model as and when we think it's necessary.
Yeah. Thank you, sir. And the second question on the industry dynamics, as you rightly pointed out, the LCOE is the North Star metric that a customer basically looks at. With battery prices decreasing further, now we see that there is some indication that prices may go up. But are you seeing that a solar plus BESS sort of a system would displace wind, except for the FDRE projects?
Yeah, we discussed earlier. Wind tariff is, let's say, anywhere between 3.6 to 3.9, depending upon which state what it is. Okay. And this, the most of it comes during the peak hours, evening peak hours. If you're putting solar plus the battery, solar tariff is, let's say, 2.5, 2.6 today with ALMM requirements. So if I take out the 2.9, unless the battery cost is less than 1.2 per kilowatt hour, the solar plus battery can never ever replace wind. Therefore, what would actually happen is nothing to do one replacing the other. The different combinations of solar plus storage, wind plus storage, solar plus wind plus storage would come in depending upon the load profile of different states or different requirements. I don't think one is going to replace the other one. So it won't happen. And also from the grid stability point of view, it can't happen.
So, thank you so much, sir.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Mohit Kumar from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, sir. I'll repeat my question, sir.
Yeah, Mohit. Because we went through other questions, we forgot your question.
Sorry, sir. No issue, sir. My question was, how is the order inflow opportunity looking like, given concerns on slowing down of power purchase agreements and the concerns related to land acquisitions? That was the question, sir.
We, at least, if you look at last 10 quarters, 9 to 10 consecutive quarters, Mohit, that our closing order book has been higher than the opening order book, in spite of the fact that the deliveries each quarter has been increasing. Okay, so therefore, order inflow has been very steady for the last 9 quarters. This itself shows sustainable growth, sustainable initiative. Having said that, looking at the order pipeline, what currently we are discussing, one is we have a 5.7 gigawatts, and second thing, looking at the order pipeline, what we have, we are discussing, I don't foresee, I'm not saying for the sake of saying it, I don't foresee order, which I mentioned earlier, order is an issue for at least next couple of years. I don't think that's any issue with respect to the next 2 to 3 years. So we'll have enough order book flowing in from C&A, plus also the our advantage is also that slowly we will move ahead with the EPC. EPC, nobody offers with land. Then with our OMS, plus ALMM. All this put together, I really feel pretty confident that order book would not be an issue.
Understood. The second question is, what are the aspirations for us, for AC Forge, for next 3 to 4 years?
See, it started, first of all, we wanted actually to put it on the growth trajectory on a consistent basis. So if you see the last 3 to 4 quarters, we are consistently seeing the growth. So, you know, we can always have a debate about, you know, this growth rate is sufficient or more. But at least consistent growth rate. In fact, if you see the quarter one, it has been one of the best quarters for SE Forge. Now the with various, one is that we are now expanding into non-wind in a big way and then concentrating on exports as well. So therefore, I don't want to put a number to what it is going to be, but we see a significant uptick. I would prefer to talk about the next 2 years plan for SE Forge towards end of this year after establishing this year numbers thoroughly. And also the whatever is happening in terms of ALMM, in terms of BIS, all these are going to help the SE Forge. No, in fact, now with this restriction, even the bearings can't be imported. Not imported, they don't use the word of imported, but basically bearings have to be domestically sourced. So I think SE Forge will stand in good position. But exactly what I see as a clear path is that it's good for us to talk first, actually showing 1 year good numbers, and which we are confident of showing this year.
The last question on export potential. I think your slides mentioned the export potential. Do you think there is a significant near-term opportunity in the neighborhood or maybe in the Middle East? And any comment on export potential will be helpful. Yeah.
There is reasonably good export potential on the, as you said, in the neighborhood, in the Middle East, even including the Europe, where we can really compete. Right now, I'm not talking about US. That was one of the first countries we were targeting. But I don't think neither you nor me can comment upon whether I can export US at this stage. But we're concentrating on the neighborhood, Middle East, and the Europe. We are now, right now, in the process of studying different countries, what models, what price ranges are there. And because most of these places, other than the Middle East, most of the places we have been present, and we're talking about our program and getting the right kind of model ready. So therefore, you know, let's say can start some sort of an exports in a year from now, gradually. But we will start up, you know, offering and taking the orders towards end of this year.
Understood, sir. Thank you. That's very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Amit from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Sorry, the line dropped. Thank you for discussing the earlier question. The second question that I had was on your contribution margin. That's been pretty good at 26%. But do you see this settling at this rate, or will it go down back to 20 to 23%? And what has been the lever? What changed that drove this jump from 23% to 46% in this quarter?
Himanshu will explain, but my wish is it stays there, but my wish can't get it.
No.
We also wish.
No.
Amit, you know, of course, I think, you know, firstly, I think we maintain our guidance that it'll be about 22%-23%. This quarter has been high, you know, because of two or three reasons. There are certain high, you know, average sales price orders that have got delivered in this quarter. And also there has been a lower project activity due to the early onset of monsoon. You know, plus, of course, we've been able to maintain our COGS. Now, the COGS maintaining would be an ongoing phenomena, but the other two factors are, you know, very quarter-to-quarter dependent. So when you sort of look at overall matrix on an annual basis, I would say we maintain the guidance of 23%. So this is clearly an outlier performance for this quarter.
Okay. Another thing, just in continuing on this point, is your realization actually are declining to around 55 million per megawatt. Now, despite you saying that there were some high price orders in this quarter and EPC was also not there, but still the trend goes down. So are we seeing pricing pressure despite the competition being tepid at the moment?
It's not pricing pressure. It's low EPC activity and low EPC billing. I mean, you know, with the higher EPC billing, the 55 million would actually go close to 57, 58 million. So we're maintaining.
Right.
So there's no pricing pressure that we're seeing from customers or from competitors.
All right. Got it, sir. This is my more questions. Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Nikhil from UTI Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Thank you, sir. Just one question from my side. So, if you look at the last 5 quarters, we have supplied 2 gigawatt, and our actual commissioning is somewhere around 500 megawatts. So, just want to understand as to, I mean, how long will this go on, and will you start facing some kind of delivery pressures going ahead, and rather have some kind of an impact on our 60% volume guidance?
It is a pretty good question. This is what's bothering everyone. Obviously, yes, commissioning-wise, when you look at it, that shows the difference. But there are a number of turbines out there commissioned. In fact, beyond June, what we announced even in these 30, 40 days, we commissioned another 55 megawatt and 166 megawatt. We pre-commissioned it. It means turbines are ready to get onto the grid, but the client is not ready with this 33 kVAR evacuation system. There's another 400 megawatts have been erected. So therefore, things are at different stages of the erection listing. And hopefully, now this year onwards, like you're seeing, the sector also is picking up. If you look at quarter one last year was 700 megawatt, this year is 1600 megawatt. Slowly, the pickup is happening on the execution. So therefore, I think before we reach the stage what you're talking about, you know, will it have an impact on turbine supply? I think we should be able to manage this. Yes, in fact, we would have supplied more than what we actually supplied in the quarter one if there was no that pressure of projects not being able to offtake. That's already there. So what is impact is the question. But to specifically answer your question on the guidance, no. We stand by that 60% with all these pressures. We know what projects we're doing it, what projects we're opening up. We don't see that this is having any impact on the guidance for VK. Categorically, no.
Okay. Sure. Thank you, sir. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Anuj Upadhyay from Investec. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. So my question relates to the ALWM, that is the localization push, which definitely would lead to a self-reliance. But don't you think so, you know, it would lead to a short-term supply chain disruption because certain key elements like special bearing, gearboxes, yaw machine, turbine control, they all are imported from China. So won't this have any kind of an inflationary impact on the cost per se? Because if you see the industry anyway, you know, India has close to 15-16 gigawatt of overall WTG capacity, manufacturing capacity, of which the utilization would be in the range of one-third, close to around 6 gigawatt is what we are executing on an annual basis. So underutilization pressure plus this cost inflation, I mean, just want to get your sense on how would this add up to?
Partially, you answered yourself the question. The underutilization goes up, okay? Because we are, let's say that some of the components suppliers today are at 25-26% utilization. Even in fact, if you look at our SE4s, is about 26% is the capacity utilization. As the capacity utilization goes up, the cost actually comes down, doesn't go up, because your fixed costs remain the same. Okay. And the second, I don't see any problem in terms of gearbox, generators and everything. We collected the full data. IW team has collected the full data and presented it to MNRE. There is sufficient capacity available in India. And also our friend saying that for the projects which are going to get commissioned in the next 3 years, where the bids are submitted are exempted, plus next 18 months commissioning for other things. So there is enough stabilization period for us to meet that. So personally, I don't see any issue. In fact, even before the notification came, I have seen many of these foreign suppliers going around the country and trying to source their things and talking to various people, designing their products. Everybody on the job. I personally don't see any issue with respect to the supply constraint, as well as I don't see any constraint with respect to the cost. Because our supply is mostly domestic. So still we are competitive in the market. Okay. So therefore, both point of view and also there being a timeline, I don't think there's an issue. In fact, if you ask me 2 to 3 years down the line, cost should actually start coming down because capacity utilization significantly will go up in India.
Okay, that's helpful, sir. And just to reiterate, you mentioned that WTG market for the current year would be around 6 gigawatt. Right,
yeah,
sir?
Commissioning
target. And any, got it, sir. And in terms of delivery, how much would that be?
Delivery generally nobody measures the delivery. We can only talk about our deliveries because we don't know who delivered how much is sitting on the ground because except us and one more, there is no listed company which announces what deliveries they made. That is not tracked by, means at least publicly it's not tracked. Even the ministry tracks only the commissioning target.
Fair point, sir. That's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Amit Mahawar from UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Congratulations on continuous growth journey. I just have one question on the orders that we've won in last 2-3 quarters. Are these different on the term in terms of advances that we have, the execution timeline, and particularly if you want to comment and connect this with the improving competitive edge Suzlon has, whether you call it LMM, right, which will plug a lot of gaps or some consolidation in the sector. So just wanted to connect these two and wanted to know your thoughts, and particularly on the quality of orders and the terms also, the timelines of execution. Thank you.
The first thing is our aim is always not to increase the price, even if you're in a monopoly situation, because price goes up, tariff goes up, and market rises.
Right.
We got saying number of times. Our aim always is to keep reducing the cost. Any new model comes when our COGS keeps coming down, and then we also keep offering some sort of a reduction to even customers. So therefore, I don't see any that sort of a pressure, and also even the latest orders what we took, we have our margin expectations, and we don't compromise on that, and everything is taken at that level only. And obviously, depending upon in some contracts, if there is there is a different risk pattern. Obviously, this can cost would go together. It depends upon the commercial terms, payment terms. Your price might vary, but otherwise, base price would remain the same.
Okay, fair. So, sir, the same question. So, broadly, you're confident that in case there is any possible minor inflation cost, it is within the mechanics to see and manage that, so that the LCO is optimized for the client.
I confirm that.
Okay. Sure. Thank you and good luck.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Mahesh Patil from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah. First question is on the margin side. So let's say given the increasing PSU orders and C&I orders in our book, can we expect improvement in margin, especially in the WTG segment? And second related question is, will the part of this improvement in margins would be offset by, let's say, increasing share of WTG in the overall revenue mix compared to, let's say, higher margin O&M business?
Himanshu will answer, but before that, if you are tracking us, you know that we were giving a guidance of saying that we've been mid-teens, then we revised it to early teens, late teens, then we said that early 20s, early 20s. We have been revising and improving our margins anyway, our guidance as well, from time to time. But Himanshu, for you to take it.
Yeah. So Mahesh, I think, as I mentioned earlier, we maintain that at least the contribution margin, we will continue at 23% on a longer-term basis, at least for this financial year. This quarter, the numbers may be a one-time outlier led by the three factors that I outlined earlier. So we'd maintain the 23%. I think the margin that we're guidance that we're giving is based on the order book mix that we have currently. Now, of course, going forward, if that order book mix changes significantly, then we may come back and correct on the margins. But right now, where we stand, we maintain that we will be at about 23%.
Okay. And so the 60% guidance that you have given, so if we consider this solely on the WTG installation, so considering the, let's say, inflation and other factors, can the top line growth be higher than 60%, or 60% is just for top line as well? That is the guidance.
We can't nitpick the guidance. We said 60% on all the key parameters, which is what we've done.
Okay, sir. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Adesh Mehta from Motilal Oswal AMC. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Hello. So just wanted to understand, versus Chinese competitors, what would be the pricing differential be? That's my first question. And second question is, with this requirement of domestic manufacturing of components, what does this do to SEForge? You commented that it will do better. If you can just elaborate more on that. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. See, on the Chinese, really, I can't say what would be the difference because the different phases are coming. Let's assume that we normally feel that there is a difference of about 5%-6% between us and them. They're cheaper till now. That's the range what it is. But the thing is that there is a great differentiation factor between us and them. It's not just the price because of which people give it to us. One is reliability of the product or how people look at it. And then second is that we are here, the Indian company, and we offer 24 years of O&M service, which is comprehensive. Anything happens during the O&M service period, any component fails, we replace things. So I think that proven track record of 30 years and we being here, our product being strong, and we also offer end-to-end starting from the land to the service business is what we get this order, especially from the C&I segment. If you see, that's the reason we are strong in C&I and public sector, these two areas. So 75% of order book coming from these two segments. That will continue. As far as your second question is concerned, with ALMM coming in, so let's see the fine print what is coming up because we also make these castings for all the gearboxes, and we also make the bearing rings. Okay? So therefore, with the significant uptake coming in terms of everything to be probably domestically sourced because it doesn't talk about domestic sourcing, but the intention is to domestic sourcing. The demand for the components from SEForge will increase, both in terms of bearing rings as well as castings. So both foundry unit as well as the forging unit, both will get benefited.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Anupam Goswami from SUD Life. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, sir.
Good evening.
As per what I can estimate, your order inflow was close to about 540 crores, and that run rate is lower than any other quarter last year. Can you throw some light on this, and how do you expect the order inflow to build up going forward?
So, from as JP sir mentioned earlier, we don't see any slowdown in the order inflows. I mean, you know, yes, whilst you're right that during Q1 it may have been a little less as compared to earlier quarters in terms of new order inflows, but that is not a barometer for the quarters going forward. I mean, there is a very active pipeline that our team is in advanced stages of negotiation. And as per our policy, now you know that any order which is over 100 megawatts, and once we have received confirmed advance from the customer, only at that stage is when we declare the order as a confirmed order. So, you know, and you will hear about certain active orders that get translated fairly soon into confirmed orders.
Okay, sir. And also, in terms of slight PPAs getting delayed and cancelled also, are we seeing any slowdown in the next quarter or so, and when do you see the pickup may happen?
As I said, that our order portfolio, 75% comes from the C&I and the PSU segment. So therefore, the only 25% comes from the bid segment. And every single order what we take in the bid segment, which we mentioned earlier, is only after the PPA signed. So the we don't take any orders where the PPA is not. In fact, even the IPP would not be willing to give the order without the PPA signing. So the whatever orders inflow is happening are all after the PPA signing. So therefore, there is no uncertainty once the order is booked.
Got it, sir. And grid order, that sort of bulk order will... are we ready for that? I mean, we are qualified to take that, right?
Which order?
Grid power utilities order.
Yeah, yeah. Today the 21% of our order book is from PSUs, and NTPC itself is, we have more than 1.5 gigawatt of order right now. NTPC is one of our the single largest client.
Right. Thank you, sir. I'll jump back.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Pratik Giri from Shublab Research. Please go ahead.
Hello. Am I audible?
Yeah.
Greetings, Mr. Chalfani. Great numbers. Congratulations. Mr. Chalfani, I have my first question on BESS. So I just wanted to get your sense, you know, in case the BESS storage goes up to, say, 6 or 10 hours, or any long duration storage comes, will the role of wind still be relevant, or wind's relevance due to long storage may change, you know, if it comes? That's the question number one, Mr. Chalfani, if you can help me understand.
Yeah. See, the longer the storage, higher the price of storage. Okay. The number of charges, what you need to do and things like that. I don't think there are two things. First of all, storage is not generation. Okay? So the storage is storing at the end of the day. And it has a huge amount of issues with respect to subsequently once the life is over, and I'm not counting all that. But at the current day, even if the prices are coming down, solar plus storage cannot replace on the tariff basis the wind. What would happen, as I said sometime back, one source will not replace the other one. There will be different combinations. Potentially, now, for example, let's take this case of what CERC came up saying, that the solar substation, where solar is connected, during the non-solar hours, they're going to give connectivity for wind or storage and everything. In those cases, it automatically makes sense for the wind and storage. Daytime, whatever is generated in the wind, you put in the storage, and the nighttime, anyway, wind, we have the connectivity. So there are so many things that are happening in the grid level. I really don't see one replacing the other. because our load profile country is different and the peak demands are different. So I think all three will coexist, in my opinion. So it won't happen that one is going to replace the other one.
Understood,
Mr. Chaitanya. This is the case I will give you is that everybody talks about the storage prices being the cheapest in China. Okay? And which is a fact. But if you go back and look at the capacity addition, what is happening there, there is a significant addition of capacity of wind, which is in fact they do whatever we're doing in 5 years, they're doing in 1 year. So if the solar plus storage is the right case, why should they add wind at all? Because in their case, there is no question of battery not being available, solar system not being available, because they have all the paraphernalia. So from the grid point of view, it doesn't work that way. It is not just a tariff alone.
Understood. No, Mr. Chaitanya, this is really helpful. Mr. Chaitanya, I have my second question on competitive intensity. So we saw the resolution of one of the European players in India recently, probably 6-8 months back. So are you seeing incremental competitive intensity in the new orders where we are bidding?
See, the competition is going to be there. And the competition, number of players is increasing. Fine. So that's the case, which we can't wish away. It was there earlier, it is there even today. And then there are more players today in the market than it was about, let's say, a couple of years back, including the new player whom we are talking about. As long as we have the specific product, when I say specific product is that service what we provide, the entire EPC plus the service business. And with our in-house technology, we do have a differentiation compared to the others. Okay. How many of them will really stand by for the service business? They might say we will do service, but will they be there? The track record in the past was, there is not even one single OEM, domestic or global, who stood here for service saying that we continue to do service. But the only company we continue to the service for entire 15 gigawatt and then doing for everything else. I think we will build those differentiations while at the same time trying to reduce our cost through various means and compete in the market. But competition will always be there.
Got it. Understood. Very useful. Mr. Chaitanya, one last one, if I may.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot. So, Mr. Chaitanya, you have highlighted this point a lot, but please allow me to ask this again, with a little bit of change. So, last quarter, I remember, you told us that the two Indian players in wind turbine generator segment are highly self-reliant in terms of their supply chain, in terms of their component sourcing. So is it fair to assume that, this ALMM issue, which is being implemented recently, is done to keep the other folks in check who are basically non-Indians? Is that understanding correct, Mr. Chaitanya? If you can throw some light. Is this understanding that correct, that the two Indian players are entirely self-reliant?
I don't know where from two, I don't remember I said two, but we are completely, we as an Indian company will completely meet the requirements what has come in. Let's understand the ALMM is not saying that, somebody from X country or the Y country is not allowed. It is not the case. What they are saying is that, boss, please design here, please manufacture here, you do whatever business you want to do, we are most welcome to do. Okay? That's what ALMM does. But then what they're trying to say is that, okay, we will set the standards for wind components. Still now we have not done this. We have only were doing it for the turbine as a whole, as a type certificate. But all these five components now we need to get listed in the ALMM wind turbine components list. And if you want to get listed, we will come, we will inspect, we check the quality and everything. Then only you get listed. And everybody has to procure only from the approved list of component suppliers. So this brings in terms of level playing field.
The line for the management has been disconnected. Please stay connected while we reconnect the line. The line for the management has been reconnected. Please go ahead.
Mr. Chalasani, you were at the point of a list of approved vendors under this new element.
I was saying that everybody is on the same level playing field with respect to procuring the same list of components. So therefore, there is no advantage of cheaper imports to others.
Understood. Very helpful. Congratulations once again, Mr. Chalasani, and congratulations to Himanshu again, for the new stint. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Shiva from Prunatra Investment Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hello, am I audible?
Yes, sir, you're audible. Please go ahead.
Yeah.
Now you are.
Yeah, good evening. Thank you for taking our time. So my first question is with respect to the installations. Just wanted to understand. So you were saying that the evacuation power, that is the bottleneck of here. So if you could just explain, obviously it is the government that has to be done, or can it be done in any other way? Like C&I or captive have their own way of transmitting, or is it totally dependent on government for this to happen? And what gives us the confidence going ahead that the evacuation, this aspect of that will improve going ahead? Is it a state, few states picking up pace, or is the central picking the entire, or if you could just explain this entire?
Yeah, evacuation is two parts. One evacuation is within the wind farm certificate system, which takes from each turbine to the pulling substation. And the second one is you have to put the transmission line by the IPP from the pulling substation to the nearest central CTU substation and the CTU substation itself. These are three areas what I talked about, whether it's ROW or various issues creating problems. The land acquisition, ROW, you see, even the power grid faces the same issue in terms of ROW and land acquisition. Everybody is facing the same issue. But having said that, I think the whatever delays have happened till now, at least CTU substations are now, with all the delays are likely to come up. Our expectation, that's why we said that this year we will do 6 gigawatts, while we did only 4 gigawatts last year. Because these things are easing out, and then we should reach 7.5 gigawatt in FY27 and go to 8-9 thereafter. Things are easing out, and don't say it's gone away, we can't wish them away, but there is a consciousness in the government and various areas this needs to be resolved. But problem is there, but slowly getting resolved.
Okay, so the second, just to understand, the 4.2 gigawatts or the 1.6 gigawatts that we installed this quarter and 4.2 last year, this is installed and giving power, right? They've already been installed and given.
Yes.
So our proportionate is slightly lower, right? Like 4.2 was installed at entire level, like 3.3 in FY24, 3.3 was installed and we've installed 882 megawatts. But FY25 and Q1 are installations ratio to the India's is way low. So what is the mislink in here?
That's because the gradually our EPC, where we have a full control component, has come down. We are depending upon more on the client's ability to acquire the land and do the projects. In fact, in our order book, about 52%, I think, at least 78% is the non-EPC. In that, again, about 52 or 54% is pure equipment supply. We don't even do erection things for that. So one reason in the last couple of years, our share has come down. But we expect this year, as we see the things, it's picking up, and we would continue to have a decent share compared, like what we used to have earlier. We always used to be around 24-25%, 26% sort of a share. We should be able to reach that level.
And any plans to move towards, because the installations are delaying because we have lesser number of EPC, any plans to shift towards EPC slightly higher going ahead, or you still feel it can be manageable?
No, we want to move to EPC. That's the reason we last time also mentioned that we are now acting on acquiring the land in advance in different states, but the result of that will come only in FY27.
Understood. And one more just thing regarding the ISTC charges. This ISTC charges, which I think 25% have started kicking in. So any rough idea about what are the C&I thing which are cross-state in our advances or in our orders, or does it have an impact in cross state, or do you think it is too early, just 25% is too early?
No, it will have an impact on them, but still 25% is much cheaper than 100%.
Okay, so going ahead after once, so
this
because...
This is a lifelong. The commission here, this 25% remains for the rest of the life of the project.
So because in the case of sun, it is throughout India, but in the case of wind, it's only 8 states, but the C&I factories will be throughout India. So that cross state thing, do you think in the larger scheme, once the 100%?
Simplified, even after you account for all these transmission charges, arbitrage for C&I is much better if you go for renewable energy.
Okay. Okay. And just one small understanding. In the 4.2 gigawatts, this doesn't include captive power that got installed, right?
Sometimes they include, sometimes, but it doesn't make a much difference. But C&I, I think, gets included in that.
So C&I is included, but captive is not included.
Captive also should be included mostly because this is they take it from all OEMs, how much they commission, their turbines got commissioned.
No, I was just checking the data earlier. They were not including this.
Whatever is connected to the grid, whether it's captive, unless it's the back of the meter, is part of 4.2.
Okay, so the power that Indian government has told that.
Shiva, we'll need to call us, please. We can connect with you offline if there's any follow up queries. Yeah?
Sure, thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. The last question comes from the line of Dilip, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Congratulations to the team for a good set of numbers. Okay, I have the last question here. See, this year, or particularly this quarter, you have installed about 444 megawatt of power. Now, that's the Q1, and it's basically summer quarter, hardly any rain and no much of external obstacles. Going forward, is the company going to have a similar kind of a tempo to have the similar things in the rainy season thing, or as the country is having too much of a rain elsewhere, and particularly the regions where you have the presence, quite a good amount of rain is there. So what is your call on the next quarter? The installation would be there. That is my first question. The second question that inventory and other things are also proportionately increasing as the sales turnovers are going. So is it something will keep on increasing as the revenue goes up, or at some point of time it will be stabilized? These are my two limited questions.
Do you want to answer?
So inventory, of course, Dilipji, in overall terms, rupee crore terms, it is bound to go up. What we monitor and we've been giving guidance is the net working capital, and inventory forms a part of it. Currently we are give or take anywhere between 90 to 100 days, which used to be about 120 days at one point in time. So directionally, we said that we are looking at reducing that, and bring it down close to about 75 days. So the trajectory towards that is very much on. But of course, looking at inventory share in rupee crore terms on an absolute basis will of course increase because of the order book and the inflows that we have.
Just a small question at this point. Sorry, just to interrupt. Small question that you recognize the revenues the moment you components and everything out of the factory and you raise the bill, or it is only recognized at the time of once the installation is commissioned and everything is complete?
No. So when we say that revenue recognition, we do at the time of the entire equipment being dispatched from our factory premises. So that's when the revenue recognition of the equipment is done. What is linked to various milestones is payments. So upon dispatch or from the factory, upon receipt of the goods at the site, upon commissioning of the turbine, that is a linkage of the payment. What invoice is raised upon dispatch of the goods.
So that will come into receivables and inventory and all kind of. It is mostly receivables. It will come into receivables. Okay, fair enough. My first question was that for that this quarter,
See that the quarter-to-quarter variation obviously there, but as an year, we gave a guidance of 60% growth, which done by that. Let's look at the year, because that if you look at each year, the quarter-to-quarter variation will always be there.
Logic, sir.
So let's look at the year basis. Year basis, yes, it will. remain.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Sure.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Suzlon Energy Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.
Thank you.
Thank you.